This is the Levels Network. I am Justin Hoddle, joined by the Triple OG, Widowin Mason, and OG. It is time to review round four, brother. But first of all, Easter long weekend. How was your long weekend, mate?
Cruisy, man. A lot of sport. That was it. Football, boxing, UFC, it was all happening.
Oh, yeah, the UFC.
And a lot of chocolates. That's why I had to get after it this morning at E-Lab.
Yeah.
Far out, man. I feel like a pig.
You got the anyway, 5:45
session. Yeah, I feel way better.
Yeah. I had a couple of runs as well straight after. One before on Sunday morning and another one on Monday morning just to get – because did the Easter egg hunt. Lenny's only like 15, 16 months old. We had like 70-plus eggs. She's only having one of them. That's it. I'm like, she's looking around now. She can see all like the wrappers. All we've got the big Easter egg.
Wait till next year.
And she starts like pointing up in it more. So yeah, I had to do a couple of runs myself, mate. But the boxing. Tim Tzu. What an animal.
Beast, man.
What an animal.
Shout out Tim Tzu, man. Nothing but respect. What happened in the second round with the elbow to the head, and then just copped that the whole time.
Yeah, round
couldn't
three.
Couldn't even see.
Round three, Luka. Yeah.
And then, like, he said that he couldn't see for nearly the whole fight, and he had to go against a big 6'6", like, big praying mantis-looking bloke who just was not stopped jabbing that same spot.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Well, that's what you do if you're in that position.
Oh,
well,
of course
right?
you would. Yeah. You know what I mean? But they reckon, I think Billy Dibb said something quite important. He said they should have stopped it.
Yeah, they can. I didn't find that out until the next day.
He said something really interesting. You know, it's not going Billy Dibb. Shout out to Billy Dibb too. Good man.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said something. I was just like, maybe they should have stopped it. The amount of blood that he lost.
Yeah, so if it happens from an elbow or an innocuous knock from an elbow or headbutt or something like that, the corner can stop it as a no contest.
He just got balls, Tim Tzu, man.
We can't hear you. Yeah, I know. I know, Lukey. Yeah, Lukey's popping up, but we can't hear him as well. Yeah. So up until round four, if that happens,
okay,
then you can stop it. But I'd imagine like the Tim Tzu, like people, a guy who was telling me the next day was blowing up about his corner not doing it. But I
don't think Tim Zoo's going, let's call this quits.
I just think Timmy's got that dog in him. Like, you know, he would have – even though it was splurting out, he still would have just backed himself to get the job
all the
done.
Things that he's saying. He's a warrior. He's from that different cloth. Yeah, he's cut from that other shit. And he is, man. He proved everyone's point. He'd be back. He would get all those belts, man. I don't think anyone wants to fuck with him now.
He's going to have to rebuild it for a couple of fights, though, you reckon?
Yeah, he just go back. I think because of that, like the Americans love that shit. You know what I mean? He needs to crack that market and they have to go, I want to watch Tim Tzu fight.
Yeah.
And I think they want to watch him now.
Yeah, true. It was.
He's got to crack that market, man.
It was so entertaining in saying that. You know what boxing's like? It's very like stats and records, you know, dependent. And then it's the money that those fighters get behind them.
Like amount of money that he gets over here, like the pay-per-views and all that sort of shit. Everyone's watching Tim Tzu because we love him, right? And then over there, you put on a show like that, you could easily quit. You watch all the Twitter messages or X, whatever it is, all nothing but positivity, right? They'll give him another crack simply because they want to watch him play and he's about it.
Is that your feeling?
Yeah, he's about it, man. Errol Spence, all these guys, want to fight. Awesome. If he fights Errol Spence or some shit like that, obviously you can't go straight to the top to those guys. But Errol Spence is coming off a beatdown from Terrence Bud Crawford. So who knows what can happen in that division as well.
Yeah, all the best, Timmy. You did
you're a legend,
proud.
Timmy.
You're an absolute dog. And very close to dog of the week. A dog of the week, but you're very close to it. All right, mate. So what I've done this year is I've teamed up with the RLPA. There's a couple other people. I'm not too sure. I won't name who else is on the panel, but basically we're putting together our 3-2-1s for the start of the season, and then we send it to the players, and they vote on their player of the month based off sort of what we give them the feedback. Because if you give them a wide range, the thought process behind it is that it can get a bit willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. Maybe, mutters Hutchinson.
Did you care about it when you were playing? The RLPA Awards? Who's your 3-2-1?
I think it was too wide because then I'd be voting for teammates and shit like that. Yeah, whereas if you've got, just say, the way they're doing it now with 5 or 6 candidates – it sort of narrows it down. It's not a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at a big list with everyone's names there.
But how they were doing it. Remember in the 2010s, you know what I mean?
Remember even remember.
Yeah, I do. I was like, no one give the fuck, right? Because of the fact was it was too broad and you can't do it week after week and no one really cares that much. If you get beat, you're voting for – you really don't care. And I think guys like Clint Newton, I was playing with Newto when they were doing all this shit, and all the guys that they got on their directors and boards and that, they understand where the players go through now. Yep. So they're putting it like every month.
As simple as possible.
Yes.
Yep.
And you get the actual best player, because when you are playing and you're losing wins and losses, that'll depend on like who you vote for.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You might have a bit of an agenda against the team.
You do not care. And just say your team carved the hell out of you and you don't like that guy. You're not giving him three. You're giving the other guys. You give someone else that. And it's not a genuine pick.
Yeah.
And that's why these guys are killing it now.
All right. Your genuine picks then. Start of the season, would you like to hear more? No, I'll go first.
I think one is Paddy Carrigan. I think up with the Broncos, they've been going really well, and he's been the mainstay there. Payne Huss has been out for a couple of weeks. He has to carry a lot of that burden. He's the sole reason. I mean, I was up there on the Friday. He's spirit and they follow him. Like he's that dude, right?
He's one of those guys you love to watch at the field.
Yeah, he's good, mate. He gets through a lot of work, a lot of minutes, a lot of kick pressure, all these little things that a lot of middles like myself notice. He does it all and he does it really well. For two, I think RTS has come out just because he's in the Warriors. Warriors are pretty good, right? Yep. I think they slipped up a couple of times, but I think they're going to be a top four team.
Yep. No. So he got your 3 points on the weekend?
Yeah, he got my 3 points.
And he would have got a couple points?
Yeah, he got two and then one. But just his presence there and the fact that he hasn't played for 2 years and he's come back and he's killed it. And I think the one is Dylan Edwards.
Yeah.
It's hard to go past. If Teddy had killed it on the weekend.
So he's your 3-pointer.
Yeah, he's my 3-pointer.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But if Teddy had killed it on the weekend, he would have been 3 or 2.
Yep.
Dylan Edwards, he's that dude, man.
Yeah.
That try that he scored on the weekend, don't think that was a fluke. The way he angled that ball in, it was like an AFL move, how they do a little pirouette and they just kick one through.
So nice, mate.
It was beautiful, wasn't it?
You've
got to respect shit like that because that's under massive fatigue. You don't know what the fuck is going on. Teddy's trying to get you. You step around Teddy, put that little angle, that kick in perfectly. And then dive on it. Like, mate, respect that sort of stuff.
You know the beauty of that try as well? Like, I had it in my notes as well. There are 7 Roosters jerseys around.
Yeah.
1 Penrith jersey.
Managed to score.
And he gets to the ball first. How? That sums up Penrith.
But that angle of the kick was like perfect. It's not like he fluked it. He wanted to do that.
Yeah,
he knew what he wanted to do. Like, that's it.
Best base tries, second best repeat set.
Yep.
Nice. All right, mate, my 3-2-1 to start the season. I've gone Nicho Hynes. He was my 3. He almost got -2 points for that Tigers game. But judging the form line for that Tigers game doesn't look as bad anymore after the Tigers went and beat Parramatta at Combank. So I just thought he got 2 points for me in the win against the Warriors. Sifa was 3 in that game, and then basically I've given him 3 points for both of the wins
against the Dogs.
Carved. Just on ball. The thing I love about Nicho is he leaves no doubt as to the result or who is the reason behind the result. He wants the ball.
He
wants it when it matters. He's always on ball, or he organises Trindle to be out the back when he wants it as well.
He's brought Trindle on too. Trindle's dude.
Looking good.
Yeah. My
two was Tommy Dearden. Tommy Dearden's been outstanding, even in the loss against the Broncos. They did him dirty by not fighting back in that game. And the game against the Knights, he was outstanding. The game against the Dragons, he was good, probably not their best. And it was a bit of a sloppy game from everyone.
Yeah.
But at the start of the year, I thought he was good to open against the Dolphins as well. And my one was Teddy. I went Teddy. Dylan Edwards has been good. I just thought he was next best for me. I had Dylan Edwards, Hammer, and Appy very close. They were thereabouts for me. So those were my –
It's pretty close at the moment. There's about 8. Is it 8 to 10 in my head that I'm like, they're pretty much on par.
Yeah.
So you're splitting hairs.
And Pappy. So the thing that hurt Hammer, Appy, and Pappy was that they only played 3 games.
Yeah.
3 games out of the 4. So they'll get an opportunity. So those are my 3 to begin with. And – I will say that the other judges weren't the same as mine. So I think there'll be a good group of maybe 5 to 6 to 7 players that the players will be able to vote on.
Yeah.
But yeah, let us know. Let us know who your 3-2-1 is in the comments for the month of March. Also, Mace, Want to pump up this golf day that we've got coming up as well, mate. We're going to be heading up to the Hunter Valley for the Red Nose Golf Charity Day. It is on April 26th, Friday, April 26th, the day before Lukey takes on his boxing. What would we call it? He's already had a couple of fights at this point of his
podcast
life.
Against
the podcast
Paw Patrol.
The Paw Patrol. So we're looking forward to that the next day up at Gold Coast. But if you want to get involved in the golf day, message the Facebook page at Paige Harris Electrical, or you can message Cooper Harris directly on 0439 270 066. There are a couple of teams left. Me and Mace will be there on the day playing, whilst also getting involved in the auction after as well. Let's get into a little recap, mate. Again, not my best result. But a few more highlighted names there.
That's all right.
A couple of more try scorers. I got three bets at the line and three anytime try scorers, a couple of them very late as well. Didn't start well, mate. Roosters -5.5. Joey Manu disallowed. Graham Annesley come out and has said that was a try. So
what a joke.
That hurts. But it doesn't go into the bank account, mate. So
oh mate,
count.
But just that fucking rule, right? Get that shit right.
I'd be furious if I wasn't just, you know, I've got $10 each on these.
Yeah, I don't care. Just like, it's the refs, mate. We'll get to that shit. Okay. It's ridiculous.
We'll get to that because I've got some questions around the obstruction.
Yeah, wow.
Souths -6.5, the late try against for the Bulldogs, ruling that one. Latrell never really looked likely. Cowboys -1.5, Nanai -325. That was probably my worst. The Cowboys were awful terrible against the Broncos. This is another bad one. Manly -7.5. I don't think the bet was all that bad. Just Manly were awful. Yeah. But I got Olakau'atu late. Dolphins -2.5. Tick. Tabuai Fido. Tick. Warriors -7.5. Just a tick. Got that by half a point. Rocco Berry, another disallowed try. But that one was pretty straightforward, that one. Raiders +4.5. After 20 minutes, I had a 22.5 point lead and I still got dusted somehow.
How did that happen?
Sticky was Ricky. Furious after the game. Matty Timocall, he was quiet in this game. $3.50, yeah. It was no good. But I finished strong with the Tigers +6.5 and Jareem Buller scored a try off one of the better efforts. So I've outlaid $640 to begin the season. $571 is in the kitty currently, so I'm -$69. So yeah, well, not going too bad, but just always good to keep an eye.
First four, I lost first four. I was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I think I won two games on the weekend.
Did you come home strong?
No. I had the Eels, I had the Raiders. I got the Warriors and Dolphins. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
It was a tough one. We'll pick Manly. Yeah, very hard week. Mm. As always, we want everyone to be playing safe during this footy season. So please keep front of mind, what are you really gambling with? And if you need free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au. Again, a big push. It's flowing at the moment. Instagram is actually pumping off the back of your Barry McDermott clip that Lukey put up. We got a big spike on Instagram, a big spike on TikTok. So thank you for everyone who has just joined. Subscribers is basically going up a couple hundred every week, so that's huge for us as well. And leave a review on either Apple or Spotify and subscribe on those platforms as well. All right, it's time to get to our BSC Dogs of the Week, OG. Mm. And this is brought to you by the BSC Energy Drinks. Have you tried them yet? They are the best in the business, whether you're a tradie, whether you're going to training, whether you're getting after it in the morning. They have 160 milligrams of caffeine, no sugar and no carbs, especially for you tradies who might be pumping something else before you go to work, before you get into your work, before you do that hard yakka. And they are HACCP tested for all the athletes that – maybe the young athletes that are trying to get amongst it as well and try to find an NRL team in the future, a soccer team, an EPL, whatever it may be. It is the best in the business. So your best of the week, Mace.
All right. There's a couple of shout-outs. RTS probably played one of his best games I've seen for a minute. He was right up there. Appy was right up there. If it wasn't just for this young kid, even though his stats aren't ridiculous, it goes to Lachlan Galvin because that young kid, he's 18 years old, right? He's a Parramatta supporter. He's told that. He was a diehard. He's a junior there, goes to Tigers. Now he's playing against his best mate, and that one fucking play got him dog of the week.
Shout out to Westfield Sports High.
Good on you, Westfield Sports. You're up there with Toronto High, but you know what? You've developed some athletes. Toronto High might pip you by one. Anyway, but that try that he had and he set up when the game is on the line, right? This is when the big dogs usually rise up. This kid gets the ball, boom, one-on-one with Blaze and bang, smokes him, money, buller. And I'm like, that's from coming off 10 minutes in the sin bin for a fucking little hip drop on Taulagi.
Yeah. It's a dog mentality.
It's a dog mentality, right? Like, and I was like, I love Appy. Appy's got that. He missed a couple of tackles in the ruck when they slid through and they scored those tries. And I was just like, this young kid has no right to be out here acting like this. Do you know what I mean? Like, go on, give me the ball when the money's on the line. We're down six. We need a converted try. Give me the ball and take my boy one-on-one. A little bit of a shake, right palm on the chest. And then there's an underrated ball that he threw in there to Buller. Boom, over the other side of the other the guy chasing back. I think it was Blaze. Blaze was sort of trying to get in his vision.
I think it was Blaze.
He turned and chased like a good kid should, good player should.
Yeah.
And he still got it. And I'm like, that send-off, right? Fucking Taulagi, right? He's standing there, little fucking Galvin hanging on his hips. Should have just looked back and slapped him off, right? If I was there, you would have stood there. And I'm with Gus. Gus and Gal were going at it. I'm like, okay, that is not a fucking hip drop. That's just him. He had his back facing. He wasn't even running. And he still had the presence to be off, come back on, make up for it. So, Galvin, my little man, Lachlan Galvin, you're my dog of the week. And I barely give it to backs.
Yes.
I would have given it Appy even though he missed two of those tackles. And I'm like, fuck, I have to give it to Galvin. Yeah. You're my boy. Well done, kid.
I like it. Lachlan Galvin, BSC dog of the week. Two backs again this week. This is rare for us, mate. You very rarely give it to a back, specifically a half.
Fucking half.
So shout out to Lachlan Galvin. But my one is a back this week as well. I'm going Dylan Edwards for his – it feels like it was so long ago now on Thursday night.
It was Thursday night.
No Nathan Cleary, no Fisher Harris, clearly leaders of the pack, leaders of this team. I know Isaiah Yeo's still there. I know Jerome Luai's still there, and they've got a star-studded lineup. But I'll rattle through the stats, but the stats – are just that. Like, this is the norm for him week in, week out. 24 for 246, 74 post-contact meters, one line break assist, one try assist, six tackle breaks, and a solo try that summed up the night, like we sort of mentioned before. And it sums up Dylan Edwards. Whenever there's a ball on the ground, whenever there's desperation that needs to be had, this is why I think people call for him for higher honours. And I know he represented his country last year, but Origin is a different beast, and that's the more topical, I suppose, contest that we have in our game. And you can understand why people think – I think he would do a great job. There are still choices currently that I have in front of him right now with a couple other fullbacks, but by no means do I think he would do that jersey a disservice. And – they love him at Penrith. He's the heart and soul of that team.
Yeah.
And with no Nathan Cleary and no Fisher Harris.
No Sorensen either. He's pretty
good. Sorensen's another big out.
Starting left back, rather.
He really took it upon himself to even an underrated part, the two conversions early. So when Roosters, you know, go behind with a couple of tries, if the game was 8-10, you know what it's like, mate. 8-10, 8-0, 10-0. You sort of just different look mindset. At it a little bit different. When you see Dylan Edwards, the third string kicker from the last 3 or 4 years for him, because they've had Nate
and
they had Critter.
Yeah.
And then he's gone. Right. So then Dylan Edwards slots a couple from 10 out from the sideline or from the sideline from the Taruva try. You just sort of go, here we go. Like, it just makes it that much harder.
Sucks.
So shout out to Dylan Edwards, my BSC dog of the week. Realistically, he's another one of
he could get that every week.
Yeah.
He's just when he's desensitized everybody, like when Tal Malolo was doing shit like that, 250 plus a week.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck, he's just the best player in the comp.
You know, the only time that players like this get the probably BSC dogs of the weeks for us is when the other stars are missing.
The other dogs weren't dogs.
Because when you got James Fisher Harris, Doug, you got Nathan Cleary, Doug, Scotty Sorensen, Doug. You're missing those amount of players. It makes the team look more human.
Mm.
And therefore, it stands out even more so than when they do it week in, week out.
It's a clinic, man.
All right, mate, got some good YouTube questions this week. Those are pumping at the moment. So if you're new to the show and you're not aware, we base our show and we like to start our show. There are a lot of maybe podcasts or even 360s and Channel 9s that, you know, they build their own show. They've got their own topics that they can build into. We like getting the feedback and the interaction with our listeners. So this is our favorite part of the show. Mm. This one comes from Clips 327. This is one of my favorites we've had in a minute. Thanks for the great pod, Skipper Scope, Triple OG, Widemu. The dynamic between two ex-players with different journeys in the NRL is refreshing and insightful. Thank you, brother. Got a question for the pod. I hear more and more young players on podcasts and interviews say they don't actually watch footy, as in won't sit down and watch an 80-minute game that isn't their own. I understand players are probably inundated with video and footy in general at training, but that seems slack. He played eSport. He said he was definitely watching his competition. In short, any insight why players have this attitude?
Yeah, that's a good question. Mm. You're probably on the money there when you do get inundated with a lot of video at training, right?
Yeah.
And it's not the actual game. There's no commentary. There's nothing. It's from Eagle Cam, different angles, all that kind of stuff. Then you do an individual video.
Yep.
So it's very specific video. It's nothing like the game, right? Mm. We used to do that all the time. Times haven't changed that much. There was the same individual video. It was the same team video. And I still watched every game.
So quickly rattle off how many video sessions you think you would go as a team and individual throughout a week, just so people know.
So you barely go in there and watch a full game. You never do. You just watch clips. You just watch clips of your you say your left four, right four, middles.
Yep.
You watch in your different little pods and then you come together as a team. So you're probably watching as a team probably like the Monday and Tuesday review, preview. So you review the game like we do now.
All right, so let's just go Sunday to Sunday would most likely go Monday review.
Yeah.
Just say, for instance, it might be Tuesday, but just say Monday review. You might do a second review session focused on your edge with your groups.
Yeah.
So it might be edges, middles, or backs, forwards, for instance. Then you start – you might have a break. Then you'll be doing a team preview. Then you'd be doing individual review. And that might be specifically for one-on-one.
And that's all around. You can be doing individual video anytime, anywhere. So it's around the clock. So during that day, you just need to do like your individual video and tick it off.
Yep.
So it could happen during your lunch break or anything like that. So it's not allocated like at a specific time, but you just do it, you know, whenever you can.
Yep.
You can do it for hours.
Then you do, again, go back to edges or specific parts of the field where you preview the next team.
Yeah.
And then to finish off captain's run, you'll do an entire group, maybe clips of maybe 5 to 10 clips of preview as well.
Yeah, training's film now. So you're watching your training as well. So you're doing all that kind of stuff, but like probably all collectively all together, you're probably watching about 2 hours or something. Mm. Maybe something like that, two and a bit. Maybe some halves are watching more on some other players.
Yep.
So when you do an individual video on yourself, you're not just watching yourself, then you'll be watching the opposition, right?
Yeah.
So that can depend. You could be sitting there for hours if you want. Most of the guys who are fucking students of the game, they're sitting there for hours. They'll sit there and study all the little things from a Cleary, from all the points of views, like mainly halves, man. Like, and forwards will sit there in their little groups and go, okay, this is how we get it. This guy, this is what he does when it gets late, left arm carry, all that kind of stuff. You know, it's very, very specific. But it ain't a shitload. So I think it's up to the individual, right? If you love footy, you go watch football. I'm not sure if it's a generation thing now, if it's like I just don't want to watch it.
The question is it an advantage, though, for the players? In your opinion. So the guys that just say they do all that video, but then you've got the proper footy heads that go home and watch.
It's an advantage to do everything.
Yes,
you do all your video and you watch everybody in game time.
Yeah.
Because it's totally different what you're watching on a fucking TV screen compared to watching Cleary on the big screen and going, shit, is that how he gets done?
Yep.
Is that how he does it? That's why, like, that's what I need to work on. You know, looking at like the advantage game, the field position game that all the top teams do when you're a bottom fucking team, you're like, fuck, I need to do that.
Yeah.
I need our middles to do this. We need to get in certain parts of the field to do this. You know what I mean? Watching it live, you understand it. I watch it on a TV screen on the big thing. It's not like that.
Mm.
You don't get a real feel for the game and the flow of the game because it's not in flows. It's in little fucking checks on the field. So everything's written down. 52nd minute, a set going in, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Everything's sectioned off. So you're not watching the flow of the game. I used to love watching the big dogs play.
Yeah, so do I.
When I was younger, and I still do, and I went off the game for probably when I retired for two years. I was traveling, I wasn't interested.
Yeah, same as me.
I was in the game for like 17, 18 years. So you just want to get out.
You got rugby league fatigue. We all get it.
Yeah, get it. But like when we were playing, we were doing all the video and then watching the game. We'd go to some, we'd come to my house and watch the games.
Yeah, same.
If we weren't playing, it was just like, we were obsessed with the game. All the great, but guys like Joey, JT, all those great players are nonstop watching footy.
Yeah.
And they still watch the footy. Cooper Cronk, all the students of the game.
I'll give you a couple of examples of players I've done interviews with over the last couple of years that I know are footy heads and watch a shitload of footy just through having chats with them away from the podcast. Reece Walsh, footy head.
Yeah.
When we were in the car together playing that golf episode,
yeah.
I'd had a chat to him about certain games that had been played already. Loves his footy. You can see it.
Why wouldn't you?
Nathan Cleary, again, me and him had a few chats about footy outside of the podcast, and you can tell he's just watching so many games. And Scotty Drinkwater was a real surprising one. He just pretty much watches every game, he was telling me. And this is, again, like not stuff that was going to get on the podcast or get on the show, but just talking footy with them about certain players, you know, what they're doing. And I think it's really specific that it's no surprise that all of those guys are playmakers. I think in particular playmakers, halves, creative players should be watching.
Yeah.
If I'm a coach, just say he strikes me as this type of guy. And now Benji's been criticized, right, for his coaching, whether that's true or not. But I bet you Benji gets with Lachlan Galvin and just asks him a few questions about like other players and I could just see that.
Look at Galvin. I think he's a footy head.
That's not working, Lukey. That hasn't been working. Yeah,
He looks like a footy head, Galvin.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, I could just tell that he's been watching every fucking game, and he will watch every game till he retires.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure where I've heard these like a lot of players come out. Who's the players that have come out? Sorry, I don't know.
This is his question.
I'm not even sure that players. I think a lot of players are obsessed with the game as well.
The Mitchie Pearce episode. Mitchie Pearce is the opposite though, Lukey. So that's what I was referencing to. So Mitchie
is a footy head.
He's a footy fanatic, and he gets his example was he gets it from Joey. And being around those guys and how much Joey loved watching the game and other halves that sort of come through. But I do think it's more, not saying that all forwards don't watch, but I think it would be more halves that are just locked into footy. Adam Reynolds, Luke Keary would be a footy head, all those sorts of.
Yeah. Well, they're looking for a lot more cues than they are with forwards.
Correct. Yeah.
You know, I just think a lot of forwards, the best forwards are watching a lot of video.
Yeah.
Because, and then especially the ones that are playing 70 to 80 minutes, the locks and everything like that. Front rows will be watching everything. You'd be surprised. They're all in there watching a lot of video, but I'm not sure if they're watching the games. You know what I mean? Like the games live on Friday night. Are you watching the game, kid?
Because
sometimes I walk past, you watch the game last night. Nah. Like, fuck, what'd you do then? I don't know. That's probably why you are where you are.
I think most players would watch Thursday nights just because it's not much to do on a Thursday night. Whether they might, you know, you might have certain things on the weekend. That's generally what it was like. I'd say Thursday and Friday night games get the most viewership from players. And then
if you're not a player who doesn't watch, start watching because it's a different perspective.
Yeah, I agree. Good question. All right, this one is from Hayden Martin, 1477. Question for both of you. Whether it be middle or edge, so I'm going to say middle and edge, who were the best defensive players you played with during your career? So whether it be first contact, reads, wrestling, etc., across the club, state, test, whether it be individuals or a group or players you defended with, love the show and keep smashing it. So, Mace, I just want one middle, a one forward, and one back.
All right. When you say defensive players, it's not like the best hitters, is it? It's the smartest defender.
Well, it's your discretion, mate.
Badiris.
Yeah.
Danny Badiris, the best defensive middle that I've played with.
You said that so like adamantly.
Because
like
he's the movements, the detail, the amount of how he wanted to hit you, where he wanted to hit you was precise. The video that he used to do, the detail that he used to have all the time on everybody, he would know everything. And he was in the middle, and he was a lightweight. And I played some great hookers, him and Cam Smith. That's the difference. His defense. That's why I pick him over Cam Smith, because if he's the better defender. It's 50% of the game.
Yeah.
And he used to go after it all the time. in the backs, and if you're talking about halves and everyone like that, like
center, winger, center, fullback.
Wingers, and I just think the most best position, hardest position on the field is probably like at your right four and right three.
Mm.
And like Trent Barrett was probably one of the best defenders.
Oh yeah, well yeah,
because you run into man. Trent Barrett, man, as yeah. a back rower. Him and Joey on par as halves.
Yeah.
That's why like, when I play with those guys in tests, no one's getting through the edge.
Mm.
Like that was smart, and Baz can fucking hit. Don't yep. get it. Don't get the good looks fucking mixed up.
Yeah,
it will bash you up.
He folded a few big boys.
He got
eh?
Eric Groth mad. Oh. And this is when Guru couldn't be hit.
Yeah,
it's on YouTube. Maybe have a look at it. Bang, just full Mongo Country Tamora strength.
Ooh.
Got it. He's got a big fucking hand. So don't sleep on him.
Baz would have been in his prime 95 to 100 of the best, you reckon? At
yeah,
six?
Man. He was big, bro. Yeah. He's like 6'3", 103 kilos.
I seen him at the golf day the other yeah. day. He's still in super good nick.
Super good,
Parramatta assistant yeah. coach at the moment.
And, I just think, yeah, he slept on defensively. You yeah. never used to like, because I used to play in the edge.
Yeah.
And my job was to spot the four and three men up. And like, where's Baz and where's Joey?
Yeah.
Like, give me on the other side. You know what I mean? Because they could hit, they'll pick you, they'll either hit you up upper body, or Joey used to get you straight in the guts, pick you up. Yep. And that's the difference when you look at JT and Joey as well.
Yeah.
So you got Cam Smith, Badiris, JT, Joey, play with both those guys at their, all four guys in their prime. And I'm like, fuck. They both have their strengths, but Joey was a better defender.
Yeah, Joey was.
You know,
close.
Like he was, there's some Origin games, man, when he played at nine and he just bang you. So it was like it was
– reluctantly playing yeah, nine too.
Yeah. In defense. You know, so yeah. There's a difference between being a mad hitter. This is why I'm not putting the hitters there.
Yep.
Otherwise, I'll be picking fucking Luke O'Donnell and, you know, Petro and Ogre and Sonny Bill and Roy Asitasi, all these guys that I've played with.
Yep.
But defensive players.
Yep.
That's my grab on it.
All right, let me put hitters in then.
I'm
going to put my hitter in. Steve Maddai for me on the edge.
Far out.
You've got to take it into consideration for this reason, Mace. It's like what you're talking about with Trent Barrett. Like, yeah, technically he might not be the best wrestler had the better control, but players didn't run at our edge because of him. And that is defending. Like,
yeah.
If you have players that know a game plan or should be running a certain line but refuse to run it because they want early ball, because they don't want to punch that hole – at Kieran Foran, like they should be running because they're worried about Steve Maddai, you're halving the field.
Mm.
And that's what Steve Maddai, for me, he gave me so much more confidence. My tackle count dropped by about 10 to 15 because I didn't have to make as many tackles.
It's real.
They were worried about him coming. Like that hit, the famous hit on Dave Tyrrell.
I've seen that.
Right? Dave Tyrrell was running in the middle of the field. I was on the bench for 2015.
Yeah.
Were you on the field at the time, mate?
I don't know where I was.
Maybe me and you were sitting on the bench at the time. He's doing the middle's jobs. He comes launching in, hits Dave Tyrrell. The other one was same team, different front row. This time it was George Burgess and you talked about Eric Groth not getting hit. No one licked the Burgess brothers
not
off
back
the
then. No, but not back then. This is Georgie 2014-15, right?
Not ever. Can you remember a Burgess brother getting linked off a kickoff ever? Except for Steve Maddai?
Not in that time, but they were in their peak then.
That was 13 or 14.
They're peaking.
That was 13 or 14, yeah.
Yes.
So that was the prime.
That's
George
prime
Burgess.
Georgie.
I remember the hit so vividly because Georgie's coming straight at me and I'm shitting myself because I'm like, fuck, here we go. Just throw the body in front. And I just go turn the body just at the last minute. Stevie comes from nowhere, cleans him up. And then the big melee happens. Fozzie's in, of course. You know, Fozzie loves it. And everyone comes screaming in. And Sammy was in there. And the first person I went to go was Sammy. You know what? Sammy's going to go crazy for his little brother as well.
Oh,
so Sammy
man.
Comes over. And when we got time to sort of just everyone just calm down after it, I told Sammy, I said, bro, like that was clean.
Yeah.
He hit him clean because everyone was thinking it was high.
It was awful.
It was right there, man.
Yeah.
It was so clean.
I don't know where he generated his power for. Like, shout out to Stevie Maddai. If you're talking hitters, he's the top three best hitter of all time.
Mm.
Probably nearly number one. Mm. That's how good he is in my head. I'm like, as I said, I went the defensive, smartness, fit, all that sort of shit.
Yep.
That guy's a pure hitter. I'm not even going to say anyone's better. Shout out to Tony Carroll.
Tunza
was a protector and he used to half the field as well. So people who can half the field and you're like, when I was at the spot Lockie up, I'm like, fuck, early ball, man.
Yeah.
I ain't going to hit inside, outside shoulders or inside because Tons is standing there and he will drill you. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the difference when you got blokes like the Sonny Bills and that. I remember playing with Sonny in his prime. No one would fuck with him. Roy, yep. Ogre, all these guys, they're all proper hitters. Yeah, it's Stevie Maddie.
Stevie Maddie. Yep, that's my back and my forward. Opposite edge, this is what made this team so great even before I got there, Glenn Stewart. Yeah. I think it was a real underrated part of his game. I think everyone understands the silky skill that he had.
Yeah, silk.
But because of Stevie, we basically made, as a back rower, I'd make 15 to 20 tackles per game.
That's great. And
because they were going the opposite edge, Gifty was a minimum 30, sometimes 40, 45. Yeah. He was super clean. He had really good technique. He was a very good one-on-one defender. And he had really good
– strong.
Like wombat strength. Yeah, you couldn't get out of Gift.
Wombat.
When people – he was like a snake. The harder you – like his brother was nicknamed Snake at the back. But whenever Gift got ya, the harder you tried to wrestle – it was like, because I got it in when we did opposed against each other, running against him for a couple of years. The harder you try to get out of it, the harder he squeezed. And he had because Chez was, they used to spot Chez hard back in the day, right? So he was defending inside Chez and he was as good as they got. Chockey was another really strong candidate.
He's a good defender. But Chockey's a good defender.
Yeah.
Like the guys like Luke O'Donnell's, the edge defenders, they were great. Bobcat was a great edge defender.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of the hardest. So one of the hardest positions to play. Boyd Cordner was a great right forward.
Boyd
defender,
was great.
Left forward, like he was awesome. Like guys who can sort of go, oh, you're not really going to get at the three man much because the four man is so good. They're the ones that you watch out for.
Boydie was the best of both, where he had such good control, good engine, but he could also lick you too if you had a good. Yeah. Boydie's.
I remember I come back from France first time, and Boydie was about 2012, right? And it was a young Boydie, right? I remember it was my third or fourth game. Ran straight in, pumped me. I was like, fucking hell.
Noted.
No, I was like, all right. Because I just lined him up. I was just thinking, okay, and he just went fucking bang, just rattled me back. I was like, oh, you little fuck. Yeah, got me good.
Yeah. I ran straight at him off of
one of the hardest hits anyone's ever hit me, actually. Yeah. I put him on top five.
Yeah.
Boyd, young little Boyd in 2012.
Yeah, we're at Brookie.
Lick me.
We're at Brookie, and we got a quick tap, and I used to try to really sneak up on players off the tap, so I used to get the wingers to get it in real quick. Got it, ran straight at Boydie. He licked me, and I got sprayed by pretty much everyone in the team.
He had man strength at 16.
Why are you running? This was 13, 14. Peak, so
This is Australia, New South Wales.
All the boys are like, why the fuck are you running straight at Boydie for? I got what I deserve.
Perfect technique, because he ain't like 6'5", he's about 6'2", perfect technique, shoulders like this.
Good dip.
One of the greats.
Yeah, good technique. All right, this one's from Lachlan Sutherland. Question for you boys, long-time listener, L1 baby. Just wondering what you think is the ideal pair of body types to pair in for your props in the modern day and age. I like the idea of a big bustler and a lighter, more mobile workhorse. So his example was Adam Fanua-Blake with the X Factor and Mitchie Barnett as a toiler. And the other one is Jordan McLean and Ruben Cotter. Like you've got the big body, the taller guy that can you rely on for probably the tougher carries, and then you've got the workhorse who's going to do like a lot of the defending. Do you think you think about the – you always speak about you and Ogre in the playing in the front row.
Great. I think Ogre and Roy Asatasi.
Did you get that on you, did
it? No. Ogre and Roy Asatasi was probably the best that I've had.
Give it to me while you talk about that.
So the difference was that Roy had such good footwork and he had pace and he could bang and play big minutes, and Ogre was just that other guy, was just a battering ram. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So those two props, I reckon, in my head, are probably the best two props that I played with, because I was the third one. I think they had the good mix last year when they had Flegler and they had Payne Haas and then they had Carrigan. Mm. That's why it's hard to beat with like blokes like that, and you've got a guy like Payne Haas who doesn't stop. Flegler's got a little bit of footwork, and then Carrigan has got that third sort of wave when he can play block shape and all that sort of stuff. So I think I played my best football behind those two. But in the modern day game now, you can't go past Fisher, Harris, and Leota.
Yeah, and they're both nuggety.
They're like, they're a different body type. Yeah. They're not like Tino. They're not like – they're more like 6'2", 100, I reckon 10 kilos, balls of muscle, can hit good, get through good minutes, can ball play, can do everything, right?
Powerful, quick.
Yes, quick leg speed.
Yeah.
Quick leg speed that can get over the 10 meters, find their front, or break through you. Right? I think the best combination in the game now, I think if you look at Flegler and Payne Haas, and then you had Leota and Fisher Harrison last year's grand final, two of the best teams, who got over the top of them?
Mm.
You know, the quicker leg speed.
It was a good battle.
It was a great battle. Yeah. It was a great battle. But you look at those two and go, yeah, they got it because Lyoto ended up getting that try and setting it all up for the finale.
Yeah.
But I think
it went in, just like the game, like 20 minutes, it felt like Penrith dominated. Then the middle period, Payne Haas played 80 minutes, kept on going. Flegler scores a try.
It was pretty even.
It was pretty even.
Can't blame the front rows.
And then Penrith come home strong.
Yeah, you can't blame the front rows. But they were the four best props in the game at the end of the year last year. Right now, if you look at a Fanua Blake and a Barnett, that's pretty good. Yep. I don't mind that. Barnett's putting about 5 or 6 kilo. He looks a lot stronger. Find his front a lot more because he's in back row in Newcastle. He's a lot lighter.
Yeah.
So I think
take Penrith out of it.
When Fanua Blake's on, he's fucking hard to beat because you got a Barnett just doing all those little dirty things, and you got a Tauhu Harris as well cleaning up a lot where he can just move around the ruck.
Yep.
Take a lot of the lion's share. Right.
Stick to the front rows though. Right now, take away. I think everyone would agree. Fisher, Harris, and Leota.
Not right now.
You don't think they're still best in the league?
Right now, Fisher's not playing.
Obviously. If they're fully fit. Like, you're taking Payne, Haas and Flegler out because they've now played different teams. So 2024, your best front row rotation, who is it outside of Penrith? Because I think Penrith is the real one.
I like what they're doing with Fanua Blake and Barnett because Fanua Blake needs more ball. Mm. When he gets like 20-plus hit-ups, 20-plus touches, you know, out the back about 5 or 6 times, they usually win.
Mm.
You know, Barnett.
They're flowing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They usually win. He needs to get
Barnett
back
does
into
the shit
that.
Carries
and
defense for him?
Yes. Yep. That's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. That's the balance of a team. They're well balanced. And then you've got the back row, all that sort of shit. But with their 1-2 punch in the middle, Barnett's just bang. Like he gets off the back of Fanua Blake. It's not like he's like, you take that tough run.
Mm.
He's smart, but Fanua Blake. Mm. You just need a Barnett just to ram that thing home. And then Egan comes out and he plays a little bit of footy. He's hard to stop. When they get that roll on over, the drums are playing, all that sort of shit, they're hard to beat. So I think now, right now in today's game, they're the best because if you're talking combination-wise,
yep.
Not the biggest names or anything like that.
Yeah, they just complement each other better than
you
a
need
lot of
that.
Other teams. Yep. All right, I like that. All right, let's get into the games, mate. Thursday, 8 p.m., we talked about it. It had our BSC Dog of the Week. Feels like it was 2 weeks ago now with Easter weekend, eh? The Roosters against the Panthers, and the Panthers win 22-16. Mace, that is 9 straight for the Panthers over the Roosters.
Sorry,
are we about to see 4 in a row? Is it Penrith in distant second?
Yeah. Well, I thought this game was going to be the one. I'll back the Roosters.
Same.
Fuck. I don't know what's going on. I don't know.
Penrith are just so good,
they,
mate.
How did they do that? Everyone's bewildered now. I'm not backing against the Panthers all year in a big game.
That
they
should
just
be a rule.
Rise to the occasion.
That should
they
be a
might
rule
lose
for us.
A random game in wherever. I don't care.
They lost to the Tigers last year.
You know what
wet.
I mean? They'll do that. They'll do something out of Bathurst. You might get them fucking slipping.
Yeah.
Around 16, all the Origin players are coming back. But other than that, if they're all guns blazing, they're ready for you. They've prepped for you. You're getting fucking done.
That's my rule for the year.
I'm done. Yeah, that's
I'm
it. I'm done. And I'm just like, you know what? When are they going to hand the reins to Sam Walker? I don't know. You can't. You just can't let that kid, whatever he played against the South Sydney team, and then someone comes back and Keary comes back. It looks all over the place.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but that was going back to Penrith. They are clinical as hell.
Yeah.
Are we going to get? We'll get to the Taruva and everything like that. But like, I just think when they how clinical they were. I just looked at where they scored those tries and like, why can't everybody do those tries where Taruva just scores and there's 5 meters out there? Why doesn't everyone do the block for block for block?
Yeah.
They do it, but it's not as clinical and they don't do it as good. It's like Melbourne back in the day. Everyone doing their job.
Yeah.
So when they just say the post are here and they just get to about 4 metres of that left post, right? 4 metres of left post. So they can get a 4-6 split, right? With even the fullbacks in there. But the lead runner is trying to get in between A and B. And then the other guy's trying to get outside the 4 men, get the 3 men involved. That's the second block. And the third block, Dylan Edwards just comes from nowhere and it's just like tip, tip, done. To get that is a lot of detail in defence. I was looking at it a couple of times. I'm like, and the Roosters should be a lot more detailed than that. The 4 men should be about 3 or 4 metres the other side of the post so he can drag his middles in. Because all you're looking for is one fucking lead. It's Lindsay Smith. Mm. It's not Taumalolo in his prime.
Mm.
So the markers can just split, right?
Yep.
And make Kenny, like I always say, tell the middles, 30 centimetres or half a metre in the middle is the 5 metres you give up out on the fucking wing.
Yeah, good point.
So make him play early. Make Kenny play early, then you can split off the lead and then get at the guy at the back. Make him play early and then get at the guy at the back. Make him play early. Then you can fucking move.
Mm.
But if you get stuck in the middle, and this is what happens when they pick on rookie middles and guys who don't understand fucking what's going on. And
fatigue.
You got three players, fatigue, everything like that. Three players covering one fucking lead.
Mm.
That's where the foreman's got to drag him out. Right? And just fucking move quick.
Hold his width.
Hold his width. He needs to hold his width. As soon as he doesn't hold his width in that butcher or whatever, they're going, you're fucking done.
Mm.
Because Dylan Edwards is coming from behind to play the ball, and so he's giving that those other guys, the four on that side, they might throw another one that way.
Yeah.
And then you're really fucked.
Yeah, they don't see it coming,
Because Kenny comes out a little bit, he steps back, comes back a little bit. The lead runner is outside B, cuts late.
Mm.
So he's outside of A. You know what I mean? It's clinical. I just rewound and fast forward. That was like, my God, that is like that, mate. Why do they keep doing that all the time? Why don't other teams just go block for block for block and score all the time? Because it's not clinical like that.
It's coaching.
And the leads they're not genuine. Mm. They're like, oh, fuck, I'm going to get the ball. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Especially that second lead. He's the main guy. And everyone is genuinely thinking they're going to get the ball.
Well, it's proven over 3 or 4 years now that if you're in the right position, you might get the ball.
And I'm just like, you can stop that, but you need to be on defensively so sharp. You got to make Kenny play. And it all starts in the middle. Because I know I played in the middle for fucking 17 years and we would go back to every play and the coach would be like, why don't you put fucking pressure on the nine?
Mm.
Why don't you put pressure on the guy out the back, make him play a little bit fucking – little bit earlier. Mm. You know what I mean? You can go back to the littlest things.
Sounds like you're getting pissed off about the
it sucks because the middle should be no better, yeah. Right? Especially in the Roosters and most teams who play against Penrith. It's detail. That's why you give detail a lot of the middles and they just fucking goes outside their head.
Mm.
You stop those tries. You talk to any outside back. What happens? Why did you stop that try? Oh, because you put more pressure on the nine. You made him play real early.
Yeah.
You made the seven play earlier.
Good outside backs will let the middles know when they're doing 100%. Well.
100%. They'll come in and tap you on the fucking back of the head. Good inside pressure.
Yeah, and they snicker it when it does.
Plus they're clinical. And so I just thought that Roosters would be all over that shit because they're very detailed in defence.
Yeah,
and they got down fucking three times.
It's a good point, mate, with the on the edges because when Taruva was scoring those tries and there's like fuck hardly anyone around him, and then when Roosters have been so good for the first three rounds, when they have the ball, it felt like Penrith had the overlap.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I don't know what they do. It's their spaces.
It's got to be coaching,
but
mate.
It's the spaces and it's the detail, right? Because I can see that because that's a little bit of Ciro, right?
Yeah.
How he sort of it's a lot of detail involved in the middle bit, and I can see why Penrith are the kings.
Yeah.
Because if you listen to Ciro, your detail will be fucking 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
That's how who was the defensive coach over there for fucking 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Him. There's a difference between the playing group that have
of course
tried and tested that have. Lived it now.
But of course.
Like you can have good coaching. You can have Wayne Bennett that can come in and coach whatever team it may be, but it still takes him a while to implement. All right, watching video, review, preview and going, these are the actions. And players need to see it continuously and see it work, and Penrith have seen it work now for 3 or 4
but
years.
But they live and breathe that whole mantra of like next man up mentality.
The best of
it. They've got Eisenhuth and these blokes coming off the bench and Lindsay Smith starting for a Fisher Harris and other guys, Garner coming in. Same mentality as the starters.
Yeah.
It's easy to say next man up mentality. Yeah. You're not fucking living it. You're not breathing it. You're not going out every week when fucking three or four starters are out. They're not world class players that are coming on the field.
Nah.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's what I'm saying. It's a system and they get plug in place. You can get Fisher Harris out and put a Lindsay Smith in there, still going to do the job.
Yeah.
The Eisenhuth, a Grant, the ones that come off the bench. I'm like, how the fuck are they doing? I'm fucking bewildered. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, I'm watching these players come off the bench and I'm like, yes, they're decent players, right? But it's not like.
They're solid first graders.
Fuck.
Yep.
And I'll be thinking, if I was a defensive coach now, I'm like, how are you stopping this shit? You fucking put Cleary back in that team, Sorensen and Fisher Harris. How are they going to go 4? I'll fucking say it now. Yes, they are. Four in a row.
Well, they got Manly this week too at 4 points.
Could be 100-0.
All right. The obstruction rule, mate. It's been problematic to start the season already. I've got my views on it. I love the black and white, but and not saying Dylan Edwards milked this one. Probably could have avoided it. Is the nicest way to put it. But there's Annesley confirmed that it was the wrong decision. It should have been given a try.
I love how he does that.
Do you?
No, it's fucking stupid. Just shut up. Yeah. Like, don't say anything. You're just like, okay, just admitting that you're wrong. Just don't say anything. It's not gonna turn back the time. Not gonna change anything.
Who does it benefit? So I was thinking that the same, right? So it's, you know, if you're a punter, whether you're a follow the team, whether you're a member, it doesn't probably do you any good.
Doesn't do anything.
It's just like coaches as well, taking accountability and blaming players after the game. I don't want to hear that.
I don't want to hear from Annesley.
Just once you get into review or if a player gets dropped, that's the way you find out that the coaches are filthy on. Like if the bunker was to get dropped, you'd be like, oh, wrong decision. Like you don't even have to say
you don't know.
You go, that
they changed him out. He's out now.
Yeah, he's done. So he made the wrong decision. I think that's the way you do
it. How do we fix this? Because it can't be black and white. We won't give it that much energy, right?
Yeah.
But I hear like, oh, we should get ex players to come in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
They did have that. Luke Patton was in there. They had a couple of guys that were in there. They were ex players.
My proposal, and I've said this before, Mason, I think this is they've got to do it. They've got to pay one person. So just say Graham Annesley decides. But this is the problem because they're also referees that aren't refereeing on that night that are in the bunker, and they mix between a couple of them. It has to if you want to get consistency with specific rules, then you have to have the same person in the bunker for all eight games. Because if you go to interpretation or you let some common sense, your common sense could be different from my common sense, Mace, could be different from Luke's common sense, and I see it in games where, like there are a couple of video refs, like Casey Badger, for instance. I think she makes decisions way too quick, and my problem with that, or I think my reasoning behind that is
they want the game quicker.
I want the game quicker, but I reckon sometimes if you make decisions quicker, and you only see one view of it, you don't really get an opportunity to dissect it as much.
Mm.
So I think there's panic in what she does, and then Ashley Klein. There are other referees that take too long to make the decision. Like you see in it straight away, it's pretty obvious. But they take their time because they want to make sure that it's not wrong and it fucking drags on a little bit longer. So there's inconsistency between the bunkers and the referees, whereas if you just have one, then at least you get the same inconsistencies or consistencies from the same person in the bunker.
Or same group of people.
Well, it's group of three every time. So you've got the head referee, you've got the head bunker official, and they've got two spotters in there with them as well. So for people that don't know, they're already looking at replays as, you know, even before it goes up. So they might have seen it three or four times before we've even seen it.
I'd love to hear live audio.
That's another part of it too,
to see
right?
What they're actually interpreting. It's like, what the fuck? You know what I mean? Like just say, because the two rules are so like weird in the last 2 weeks with the Parramatta guys. I mean, like Jakey standing in the line, that guy not really getting to him if you know your football, you know, you're not getting to Turbo. So that's where the grey area is. And then you go through the line with the Hargraves one the next week because they say go through the line so Hargraves takes it to another level and runs nearly into the dead
he's
ball line.
He's doing his job. But he's trying doing to get his through. Job. Yeah.
What about Dylan Edwards? He ran into him, right? Is there anything on the ball, like just say the defender?
Yeah.
Is there any onus on the defender?
Not really.
Not really, eh? So they're ruling it black and white. And it's like I can see like the 15 for Parra was not going to get Turbo.
Yeah,
but
already.
I know Jake was standing in the line, so that's the interpretation. But then the Hargraves one just threw me off. I'm like, he ran through the fucking line. Dylan Edwards was coming over. He ran into Hargraves.
Yeah.
He's through the line. Yeah. I think once you're
Hargraves is looking straight and like this way, can't even see Edwards.
Dylan Edwards knew where Hargraves was. Yeah, Hargraves is just running straight through the line. So I'm like, the interpretation there is like, you told him to run through the line. He ran through the line. Dylan Edwards, therefore, runs into him. So fucking unlucky, Dylan. You ran into him. He's doing his job. He can't look out for fullbacks and everybody coming around the fucking back.
Mm.
That's my interpretation of it.
Yeah.
You ask him to run through the middle, middles run through the fucking line. That's it.
Yeah, he went all
dry.
I think communication between the referees. You remember last year when a referee copped some heat for it when he was talking to, I think it was Ashley Klein who was in the bunker and he sort of told him, check that. No, did you see that? And he'd actually missed a part of it. I think that could do with some work as well. Just like I think it was maybe Grant Atkins was communicating with Ashley Klein. He said, "Oh, just check that last bit." I think communication between the refs and the referees telling the bunkers exactly what they saw live does.
Mm.
Are you seeing the same things?
It's a hard
but
one.
But back to the footy, Dylan Edwards was outstanding, obviously. Brad Schneider looked like a seasoned vet. I've got this question for you right now.
Where did he come from?
If you're a journeyman. Canberra Raiders Super League.
That's right. Sorry, yeah, I remember.
Back to Penrith. If you're a seven journeyman, New South Wales Cup vet, Super League player, played three or four seasons in full time, you're asking your management to speak to Penrith and find out who their backup half next year is in.
Yeah.
Sean O'Sullivan gets a deal with the Dolphins. Cogger goes and gets a deal with the Knights. Schneider looks like one of the top three halfbacks of round four.
Yeah. It's just, as I said, it's that system because those guys have left and they haven't fucking set the world on fire either when they've left Penrith.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not saying they're guns.
I thought you were saying just go and sign every backup quarterback from Penrith. I mean, halfback.
No, don't sign them. You're the management of a half. You go to Penrith to sign them.
Shit,
so you can get the payday.
Smart.
Yeah.
I want to know who's behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked all right. I was just like, it's plug and place. It's just ridiculous. What a well-oiled machine. When you're another team, you're just thinking, how the fuck will we beat these guys? How? Hopefully they're off this week.
Here's a question for you too. With that nine in a row, was there ever a top team that you played against that you had a really good record? Like nine and 0 is crazy in this modern day, but like Roosters are a top team. You think about in the 4 years that they've got – so Jerome Luai hasn't lost to the Roosters.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think my first
that, is that a crazy on? Start or what? You know how they've got these crazy like winning percentages and shit. Jerome Luai started playing full time in like 2020, so he played
and he would never
about
lost.
15 games in 2020 or 19, and that the year he missed a few games that year and didn't play against the Roosters.
Even like a Dylan Edwards probably would never have lost.
Maybe
Fish and all that. They've lost ones in the early Melbourne. I had a good record against Melbourne early days of the Dogs.
Did you?
Yeah,
okay.
From about 2006 or seven.
Yep.
Probably didn't lose that much.
Yep.
Because I think we had a pretty solid side as well, but they weren't the Melbourne that they were like, the late 2000s, whole 2010s.
So
still pretty good. Yeah, still pretty good. But the Bulldogs, we always had a good record against Melbourne.
Okay.
I think it was just because it was a rivalry thing.
Yeah.
Because like Chris Anderson went down there, so like he was a new coach. So that was really embedded into all us players.
Yep. Mixed start again for the Roosters. Where do you see that this form line? Is this Penrith great or is this distant second with everyone else and that's just the Roosters are at? Or
I think we're how to beat Panthers, right? It's like when power play them, it's very ad-lib football, very hardcore, hard through the middle, offloads, second phase football, and play footy. You need to play football at Penrith. You cannot just play one out,
and
try and kick
four.
This possession game, the field position. Yeah. They're going to bash you. You're playing into their own, into their hands. It's like playing against Melbourne was 10 years ago. You had to really disrupt them defensively. Who does that? Parramatta does it the best because they go through the middle, they got offloads, you got like big Junior Paulo, they're hard defensively, and they just – Mitch Moses plays off the top of his head, so does Dylan Brown.
Yeah, they play with more shape straight away, don't they, early in sets.
And they just fucking play at you and they just nonstop. And I think Roosters could have done that, but they're very structured. Sam Walker, they need to take the reins off Sam Walker and just give him the team.
Mm.
It looks better when he does. Like he's the future of the club.
He would suit – his style of footy, if you let him – take the reins against Penrith would suit.
Ad-lib football, man. Like, and he just plays, he sees what he sees in front of him. And because he's not that dude in that team yet, because Kier's still Kier's team, Brandon Smith's team.
You know what would happen in that? I reckon Roosters might, instead of Roosters only losing by six, which they did, I think they would either lose by 20 or they might win.
Yeah, they might.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, it's like, hard, man. Do you live and die by, if you play that style of footy and it doesn't come off, they might get pumped by 20 and. Mm.
But they're not going to play it all the time. Obviously, you're going to play with some sort of structure. But on those long shifts and all that kind of stuff, like it's just very predictable. It looked very predictable for them, the halves play.
All right. Friday, Good Friday kicked off 4 p.m. The Rabbitohs just get home against the Bulldogs 20-16. I was called this game for SEN. I went down on the field and interviewed a couple of players, Mason.
What'd you think?
It was more just relief. It was both teams were trying not to lose the game, in my opinion. But you're obviously frustrated as a Dogs, great, as a Dogs fan member.
Yeah.
There are signs of improvement there and it's tough to take, I think. They're missing key pieces for sure, most notably a long-term half. Taff was good, but he's not someone you'd think would be there long-term. And the middles, mate. But let's specifically on Souths. Let's start with Souths and then we'll get to the Bulldogs. A much-needed win.
Holy shit, sorry. I'm just looking at the completion rate there.
94%.
What the? So they should have won.
Yeah. That shows
20 to 16. Ooh, they're off.
Yeah.
They're off. Big time. They are off. Yeah, right. I don't know. I'm as an ex-Bulldog, you know, I love the Bulldogs club and everything like that, but like you're sick of like games like this letting it slide.
Yeah.
Like they if they're gonna get souse, it would have been on the weekend.
Correct.
They were off. You know what I mean? They had 94% completion rate, right? And they just got you by 4 points.
Missor brought up a good point. He said as a Bulldogs fan, there are certain games that you tick off.
Yeah,
and you have a look. It's Titans, they get the job done and was a good victory. And at the start of the year, you probably wouldn't have ticked this Souths game as a potential win. But because of where Souths are at, this is a chance to get a team.
I genuinely thought we're going to win.
Yeah.
Genuinely. You know that. I was just like, we got it. We'll get it this week. Because of the reason Souths have been – they're down, right? Mm. They're right down. You've got to get them while they're down because all they need is a little bit of confidence.
Yeah.
And they're back up. And Latrell just turned it on a couple of times here and there. And we had it. The game was there.
Mm. You know what? There was a moment –
I'm trying to think of the moment, right? You can pinpoint it. I've watched this game fucking twice.
Yeah, I've got
one. And I'm like, where did it go wrong?
The tough call. Reed Marnie on the kick pressure on Latrell was a really tough call.
That turned the fucking whole thing, didn't it? I'm not solely blaming that, but the momentum for those guys. Two quick tries.
You know what was really tough for you? So the second, the Whiten try. So Matty Burton and Hutchinson, they were sticking to the game plan. There's a good arm wrestle. It was the type of game the Dogs wanted to play. They put a kick nice and deep. Latrell's the only one back there. He's had such a good defensive line. There was like 7 or 8 of his. And he does the this offload. Really late offload. AJ goes burning down the edge. And it was like after that point, they score. They go up 12-0. And he's had to get out of that grind style of footy that would have – I don't think Seahawks are ready to get into that.
No.
And then because he gets that offload and they make a break and score, you guys started playing more footy, therefore a few more errors. And then at the back end of the half – Curtis Moran, no try.
Yeah.
You're about to break their backs.
Poor Moz. He played outstanding.
He was good.
Oh, he was outstanding, Kurt Moran. Oh, that was a heartbreaker.
This is what hurt you, though, for me. Liam Knight and Sam Hughes, 14 minutes each off the bench. You just got no big boys, mate. There's no big boys through the middle. And you got Salmon, Curran and Mann and Moran who are trying their guts out. They're undersized. They're just defending the entire time. They're trying to throw a little bit of shape. But the main area for me from afar, you're lacking big boys in the middle and you're not going to get it. You're not going to be able to match teams who can complete at 94% with a lack of middle. So
And South's middles aren't as dominant either.
You
go up against a Penrith, a Broncos, a North Queensland who really rely on taking the game through the middle, then you're going to really come unstuck.
You've got
We really need, the middles, they've got the biggest job every week.
Yeah.
They do. And because you can't really shift the ball like side to side, everything like that, all game, you've got to establish something through the middle. So it's like they have, I reckon, the hardest job in the NRL, the Bulldogs middle.
And it doesn't get any easier. They get the Roosters with their middle coming through and then the Storm down in Amy. So tough one coming up. Preston, he's
tough. I didn't know he broke his jaw.
Broke his jaw, mate.
How the fuck did he get back on? I'm like, he's back, Presto. Yes, and I'm like, there should be just a straight like, nah, he's out.
That was a category one.
Yeah,
that was a category.
Then he comes back. He's got that's toughness, man. I love that kid, Presto. He's personifies what a Bulldog is.
Yeah,
but you got to take that element out of his control, right? And you're not coming back on because imagine if he gets a hit on that jaw again. That's a whole shattered fucking face. And you're not out for 3 weeks. You're out for the year.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I don't know what happened.
Mm.
Independent doctor. No, mate. Yeah. You're not going back on, son.
I've seen a lot worse given category one. How they gave that category two, that was – I think everyone was sitting home going, he's done.
He's past his HIA. What's happening?
If he wasn't knocked out from Shaq Mitchell on the initial contact, then Stephen Crichton hits him on the back with the whiplash at the back that was just as hard because of the contact from Shaq Mitchell. He got KO'd twice in the same hit and broke his jaw. Fuck, he's so tough,
take this
mate.
You've got to take this out of our hands, right? Players play. I always say that. You've got to go, you're done, mate. You're done.
this is the prime example of why the rule was brought in, to protect players like this.
From themselves.
Because he's as tough as they come and he won't come off. And there are other guys who fucking do it willy-nilly and go off for light, you know, 15-minute breaks just to get the breaks. Whereas Preston, you've got to take that because he's always going to try to – I don't know how he passed
the – How did he pass the test? That test's not – it's not easy.
No.
Oh, man. Genius. Genius,
all right, though. Mate. The game on Friday, you were watching this game live too. The Broncos were outstanding, 38-12. Cowboys are killing themselves, but you can't they can't get the job done against the top teams, Cowboys. So the form line, it's they were the only undefeated team going into this game.
Mm.
They play a Broncos team with Adam Reynolds, who's returning from injury after a knee problems from the first, from round two. He actually looked really good. The knee looked fine with his kicking game.
No Walsh, no Haas.
No Walsh and Haas.
If they're fair dinkum, the Cowboys, they'll dust them up here. I don't think they're ready for the rain, right? So it was a beautiful day in Brisbane. So we're sitting there, we're right on halfway, and I'm like, it just started pissing down rain in the warm-up.
Did it?
So the game would have just got and obviously the Broncos had to play in it as well, but I just think they played a lot better.
I'd assume that it had been raining all day way it looked. No.
Just right on just like 10 minutes before the game, it started pissing down.
Yep.
So that really, I think it might have rattled the Cowboys a little bit more.
Here's a stat for you. They've lost 8 out of their last 9 in rain.
There you go.
Wet weather conditions. Like you can't win a comp with numbers like that, can you?
Just sitting there before the game, oh my God, it's raining, we're fucked.
Yeah. Like we're about to go into winter.
Get used to it.
And it gets wet at the back end of the season and around spring as well.
And I thought they would be used to it because it gets like quite dewy and everything up at the Cowboys Stadium.
So they refused to play wet weather footy, mate. They were still spreading it and throwing it around.
It wasn't, but it just wasn't clinical, man. It was just like, I watched it from –
That's my point.
It looks scrappy. And I said, these guys are going to get pumped by the Bronx if they're not careful.
Yep.
You know, Tristan Saylor come in there. He was dangerous as hell.
Yep.
Paddy Carrigan. They just didn't – they were relentless through the middle and their completions were great. Yeah, they just look very far superior. Like just me looking at the game with no commentary or anything, like I said, Broncos look fucking sharp. Well, you throw Haas and a Walsh in there.
Yeah.
She's different.
You know what? There's a part of me now that's thinking I'm looking at the stats because Reynolds, it was a game for Reynolds. Yeah. Whereas if you throw a Walsh in there, just like Drinky. So Drinky and Val, they came out with 8-9 errors between them.
Big game.
Right? So Val again had a stinker, but Drinky again was forcing it. That's what Walshy likes to do.
Mm.
They're the same.
You might need a safe little choice there.
Yeah, they refuse to play conditions because they back themselves, which is you live and die by your strike weapons, right? But it sort of suited not having potentially Walshy there in this game specifically, not long term, because he still would have tried to throw the double cutout.
Yeah, I don't think anything faces him.
Yeah.
Fucking short sides, everything.
Same
like
as Drinky.
That. Yeah, they do live and die by it. But like games like this right now when it's on a knife's edge and momentum can really fuck you.
Kick the corners.
They just refused to do that in the first 20 minutes. So I could see it watching by myself. I was just like, they're going to get blasted through the ruck soon. And because they keep making mistakes on the edge and everything, it's just like – and their care factor was just like, ah, fuck, we'll just defend it.
Yeah.
They just couldn't defend it.
Yeah.
Because they're pretty good defensively.
Yeah. And they would have backed themselves. Especially the outside backs were doing it. The forwards must have been going, fuck this. Get to an end of a set.
I could feel that energy.
Yeah.
Even though not watching it like on TV, I was like, I'd be really frustrated if I was in the middle.
That's what I felt like me watching it.
I was just thinking like, if you keep dropping the ball like back five.
Yeah.
Dude, you're killing us in the middle. And I think just say most games like that we've been watching the last four weeks, the people who make the most mistakes like the middles, they're the ones who cop it.
Yeah.
And if your middles aren't resilient enough or good enough to defend more than two or three sets, you fucking struggle, mate. You'll get points scored against you.
24 from 39, 61%.
Yeah.
You just can't win a game like that. We talked about just before, a 94% for South and they just get home.
Mm.
So if you complete at 61%, you fucking no chance, especially against, even though they're missing a few troops, experience Reynolds, experience Paddy Carrigan, Jordan Rickey was just kick chase and everything.
They were good.
A good team performance.
They were pretty good.
What about Tommy Dearden's tackle on Cobbo, mate?
Yeah.
I've got
it's early, up there with Sats.
It's as good. Like, I think it's another regular season candidate of all time. Like, we've had Xavier Coates, one of the best regular season tries of all time, and now Tommy Dearden comes up with arguably one of the better ones that I can remember. I think someone tossed up Xavier Coates, same field on Dane Gagai a couple of years ago. You remember that one?
Yeah, that was good. This one was another doozy. This is the top of one.
It was a good one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Just because
it's not a grand final.
Yeah, just because it's not a GF, but also because
Origin.
Tommy Dearden. I think he didn't have a better angle as what Chez did and Sats did on their tackles as well. I feel like he had to come from a little bit more. Shout out to Tommy Dearden. He's a dog. The Dragons versus Seagulls in probably the worst game of the round. Saturday at 5:30 at Wynn Stadium. Credit to the Dragons for the bounce back. There was rumours going around the game. Obviously, Zach Lomax, there's been reports that he's unhappy. He's been linked to Parramatta. He's been linked to the Roosters. And there was also rumours that they'd been chatting with Manly. And Flano's come out now and said he's happy to at least have conversations, paraphrasing to a degree.
Said, give me some players for him.
He wants some players, or he doesn't want to pay anything on the cap for Lomax. So that's a big – so is a team willing to pay $800,000 for Lomax? Now, that's the sticking point. So the rumour was that there's been chats of a swap Schuster for Lomax. Now, is it true? Who knows? But just say if that was to coincide – do you think that's a fair trade? Who benefits from that trade? Do both of them benefit because they both want to move on? Happen.
If you're looking at Schuster, what he's doing now in reserve grade, and you think, okay, was he going to come in and do a better job than Flanagan? Is he going to come in and do a better job than our back rolls or Locke?
Yep.
And for 800?
Mm.
No. You're keeping Zach Lomax.
Yeah, okay. So also, Siebes has said before the game that he was always going to give Shuey 3 to 4 weeks because when Shuey comes back into the team, he's still a big part of their plans. When he comes back in, it's his job and he has to keep it. Yeah. So he set a challenge for Shuey. Shuey was good the week before, apparently not so great on the weekend. And he said, he's sick of this yo-yo with Schuster where he has form dipping and going into first grade, out of first grade. So he wants to get some runs on the board, playing him in the middle so then when he comes to first grade, he's locked in for the rest of the year.
It might be a couple of weeks. I said the way he looked on the weekend compared to what he looked like last year in the Manly. Might be the jersey.
Yep.
Might be the jersey not as fitted, but like he didn't look that fit. And he wasn't that like, you know, if he was willing to get into first grade, he would have carved the shit out of that team.
Yep. Come back into the mic.
You know, like he looked like he was just going through the motions.
Yeah.
You need him going to reserve grade and just trying to whack blokes and taking the line on and doing things that he can do in first grade.
Well, whacking is never going to do that. Well, that's not part of his game.
Be in defense. Yeah. Defensively.
No misses.
Yeah, you just can't be like that in first grade because you get found out. And it's all these little things that Steve's – it's the detail, right? It's all the little detail things. If you're going to be defending on edge, it's the hardest position on the field.
I don't think he's going to be edge. I think Steve's is playing in big minutes in the middle. Because
even worse.
He's going to be – no, he's not going to play big minutes though. I think he's going to be a player that is going to be required for 20 or 30 minutes off the bench. I think that's where he can be. I still think Shuey's the best part of our best 17. And I say our because obviously
he should be.
Him.
He should be.
The perfect role for me, for him, I think, is sort of what Nathan Brown's doing, where he comes on the field and plays a little bit of footy with the tip on. So I think he can do that better than what Brownie can do at this point of his career and still young enough. And then you don't require him for big minutes. It's 20, 30 max. Just before halftime, just after halftime, once it gets to the crucial point, you don't want all that ball playing. You get him off the field and you put it on someone a little bit more rock solid, and then that's when you rely on Chez Turbo to finish off the
definite
game.
Definite role for him, right, like that. You can't say you're going to play in the middle at lock and be our ball playing lock. And no, you're not that because you can't play enough minutes and you'll get spotted up in defense. They'll get at him and it'll be a detriment to the middles and they'll fucking hate playing with him because you'll have to back him up because he misses, not missing tackles, but he's not smacking people. In the middle, you need to defend a fucking 95% efficient tackling.
Control.
Control the ruck. Don't be a spot in the middle. Otherwise, you're going to get your ruck blown. You see the teams with weak middles. They get fucking blown out. You know what I mean?
It becomes fatiguing for everyone, doesn't it?
You can't, and people aren't going to protect him in the middle, right? Because he's good enough and he should be in their top 17. The skill set that he has been blessed with. Running it like he needs to find his feet in reserve grade. Give me two games, play him 80 minutes, and fucking put him in first grade.
That's the plan
to get up for reserve grade.
You know what I mean?
When you've got so much talent, he'd be like, fucking put me up there. He's not going to give you what you want in reserve grade. Do you know what I mean? He's going to fucking play to that level.
So, do you like to play him from Siebes? Two more games to get up?
Yeah, not even that. Just bring him up.
Okay.
Put him on the bench, give him 20 minutes. I'd get more out of that if they brought him up in the next 2 weeks. Just on the bench for first grade and got him 20 to 30 minutes in the middle. He would fucking pay dividends doing that than playing fucking 80 minutes and fucking around in reserve grade.
Probably not Penrith this week, though.
Not Penrith.
Wait till the week after.
Go. Not this week, Seeps.
Let's get to the Dragons. I thought, even though it was scrappy, it was a tough watch. There's so many errors. Jack Bird looked physically, he was getting after it. He went after Cole.
They look, they're physical as hell. Like, yeah, they've got big dudes like Ravalawa,
Jaden Sewell, Jack Bird, and Lomax on that edge. Now, you can beat that edge with skill. To start the season defensively for tries, they have been the worst edge in the competition, believe it or not.
Have they?
Believe it or not. Yeah, they have. They've let in the most tries on that edge.
Okay.
Because you think of the Cowboys games and then they've got blown out. But physically, you're going to have to fucking chuck on your shoulder pads and get ready to defend against them.
I can't believe how big they are. And then you've got Luch. You've got big Luchi there as well.
Like, yeah, Luch is on the left with
Sully and Ravalawa. Like, regardless if they're not making yards, you still got to put your body in front, because if you don't, they're going to go through you. And then an offload's going to happen, or something's going to go back to the middle of the ruck. So if you've got to be effective with those guys. Physical men. They look like a bunch of men. They get their shit together. They can fucking go at anyone.
They should be doing what the Dolphins are doing, right? They remind me of the Dolphins. Like, big, physical, probably don't have the speed.
Man.
They don't have the speed that the Dolphins have got. But physically, they should just go.
A bit older.
They want to win their games like this, 20-12, 18-6. They should have that mindset. The 42 fucking whatever that 24 was against the Cowboys. Fuck that off.
Yeah.
Keep it low scoring.
I think they're gonna find their identity, I reckon. If we can have this conversation another 4 weeks, you know, I think with the higher size like Panthers, I'm like, they're there, right? Yep. But these other ones, the 6-12s, it takes about 8 games, you're right? We're always about 8 to 10 games before they find who they are.
Mm.
If they find who they are, St. George, they're going to be hard to beat because they're big, they're physical, they're fit, and they've got a Ben Hunt who can kick you out of trouble. You know, you got the skill set there. They can score tries like Sloan, X-Factors, get out of yardage, bore the shit out of every team with high completions and physicality, and you'll fucking end up winning more than you lose.
Yep.
And Flanagan knows that better than anyone. And it's just going to take a little bit of it. It's going to take a little bit.
That's a Flano DNA.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, they just look really physical down at fucking, like, was it down in Wollongong?
Yeah.
Yuck. Yeah. Sad day.
It's always tough to play down there, right?
They just bash you. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just a yuck game.
And
they've got that team to really, like, to get you. The Sewer, he's an animal in the back row. Like, DeBellin's coming off the bench. They hit hard. They all hit hard.
Yeah.
There's not really any person that comes in who's in that team that doesn't try and whack you.
DeBellin off the bench was a nice move as well. It shows it's a full-on 17-man game these days, isn't it?
They looked all right.
Mentioned the Dolphins. They were really impressive in the next game. Down by 14 at one point, they were down 12-0. They go on to beat the Titans 30-14. Here's a question for you. Do the Dolphins have the most underrated spine in the game? So, Jeremy Marshall King, where does he rate for hookers in the game? Hammer, where would he rate for you, in your opinion?
Fire, yeah.
He's keep like going, probably going, middle of the going. Pack. Katoa is looking good. And then obviously
you said that last week. When he signed that deal, he looks like a completely different player.
Drop the shoulders,
get to fucking playing like he was in fucking school a couple of years ago. That's what he looks like.
Yeah.
I've just signed a deal now. I'm comfortable. Wayne's happy with me.
He's the guy.
Team's happy with me.
Yep.
He's, you know, puts all the, you know, you're our dude. Take a set.
Yep.
They are underrated. Who's fight coach? Nick Arima comes in and out of games. Yep. I'd love to see him solidify himself as fucking one of the most talented people in the NRL, because he is.
Mm.
He comes in and out of games, but right? Consistency. He's got to be that OG between those guys, man. He's the one who's got to get those good kicks in. He can't afford to kick out in the full or miss little details in his game.
He's got to do what Caesar's doing at the Tigers.
Yeah.
What Chad Townsend does at the Cowboys.
Yeah. With a little bit more fucking pizzazz, because he can attack.
You know, he
sees little cues and he'll fucking blast you through the ruck. He's sort of like a little Stacey Jones. That's what they thought he was, you know, quick like that. So you don't want to really, you don't want to make him play his best football, because he'll carve you. Yeah, it is very underrated. Because I think, look, Hammer's a top five fullback in the game at the moment.
I love Hammer, man. Hammer does.
Marshall King at his day, man, he's top. There's some good hookers in there.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, about 6 or 7, he'd be around about that mark.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you go Harry Grant, I think he's my number one.
Yep. Appy too.
Appy. Fuck, who else is there?
Robson, Wade Egan.
So he's
Mitch
there.
Mitch Kenny.
He's right there with those guys then.
Mitch Kenny.
He's right there with those guys.
Yeah.
Keys. That's what I'm saying. He's a 5'6", 7".
Yeah.
And that's pretty good.
Yeah. Probably missed the cut.
And then Nick Arima's like,
whenever we do this, I bet you there's people listening screaming at us. Like,
we don't have fucking screens giving us the top 10 fullback. If you ever look at my screen, guys, it's blank.
Dolphins look a lot fitter across the board. I like the signings already looking the grouse. Probably Herbie Farnworth and Flegler have brought that winning mentality with them. And Avarillo looks like the for whatever reason he started on the bench to start. Must have had a good offseason. But Avarillo and Farnworth with fucking Lockstock smoking barrels on the left there and Asako, they've got themselves a very dangerous back five.
You know what changed the game? The OG Kafusi just went, I'm done with this shit. Yeah. I'm fucking cracking blokes. Yeah. And then everybody followed.
Yeah, he does.
And they turned the screws on him. You know what I mean? I think it was like 12-0, 14-0. They're like, this is not us. Yeah. And we're going to go after it. And then everyone's went, holy shit. So they've got that capability, right? And that's why you've got those old school guys in there, because they bring that genuine threat. It's like, okay, we're fucking down a little bit, boys. I can turn it up. Kafusi can turn it up. And then he looked like Kafusi from last year.
It's crazy.
Scary. Yeah.
He just flicked the switch.
He flicked it and went, I'm going to crack about three or four blokes and they're going to just go, oh, fuck, who's going to come at him?
Right? I wonder if he's the sort of guy that's like vocal, says anything, or just goes and does that shit and then everyone just goes, all right.
All right, Fusi's back.
Finn Diesel's on.
The juice is on. The juice is on. Let's go. Then everybody followed. And I was like, yeah. Then they just, once they turned the screws on them, they just started playing some good football. So they've got the capabilities to go against anyone. They're sitting on top of the ladder. Good on you, Dolphins. Yeah, well done. Dolphins. You know.
They were same position this time last year, though. Yeah. So it's now, now the next step is to get in the top eight, solidify a top eight spot. I know Uncle Wayne's leaving next year, but there's some good things put in place. Jersey Flegler. Here's some stats for you, too.
The jersey was on.
50 minutes, 15 carries for 150 of the best, 5 tackle breaks, 22 tackles, only the one miss, nice little try assist as well. He is an elite front rower.
Yeah, he is.
He was in the shadow of Paddy in Payne last year.
I think he wanted to leave.
He said that.
Because he goes, you know what? I'm going to be in Payne Haas's shadow for 10 years and I won't probably get the accolades that I deserve. Mm. Good on him for going out there and having the balls to go, you know what? I'm going to be the man at the team, the Dolphins, and then he's in the top 17 every week. He'll be like that in Origin and Test football for the next 5 or 6 years.
What do you reckon they Dolphins got Flegler for at that point?
Fucking whatever 800, it is. 800 or 900.
Fuck, it's unders.
Yeah?
I think his
next deal will be that if he goes to where he's going, right? Yeah. He's not in the million-dollar phase yet. He's not there. Like, you got to be in that Payne Haas and sort of Tino where it's like you're that dude for 4 years. They've been that guy.
I have a feeling. I have a feeling because when he signed, remember he was – He was the number two or number three. I reckon he would have got about 650.
No, he got a shitload.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll good on him.
No, he did. He got a heap.
What about mini Flegler, mini Jersey Flegler Plath? that hip drop.
Yeah, that's terrible, son. Come on.
That's the worst one I've seen.
That's the worst one I've seen, and everybody knew it, and it was just like, oh, I said, he's going to get sent off.
Yeah,
that's how bad it was.
He deserved to be.
Yeah. And if you're going to when you're trying to get rid of something, when something like this comes up, you've got to fucking rule it with an iron fist.
Well, they've come down so hard.
I'm just saying, it's a send-off in just 4 weeks and no one will ever hip drop again.
Well, I thought they've overreacted in the last couple of years. They had an opportunity to send a player off for the most classic version of a hip drop. So we'll get to grading a little bit later. We talked about Galvin before. Him and Galvin, there's no difference. There's grade 3 dangerous contact for both of them. Like, that's the max you can get. 2 weeks he's going to get with an early guilty plea. Same as Galvin. They've both got the same charge.
And that's silly. I'm all for the players and everything like that. And like, he's a good kid, the Plath guy, and Galvin, they're good. But when you're trying to get rid of a disgusting tackle technique like this, you got to rule it with an iron fist. And so nobody will ever attempt a fucking hip drop again. Because those two tackles could have been really bad. Like, are you waiting for a tib fib to pop out? Waiting for that? Get it out of the game and fucking go, all right, 6 weeks and a send off. No one will hip drop again. You know what I mean? And this is the right kids to do it to. It's not Munster, you know?
Shouldn't matter.
I know that, but I'm saying they get real careful who they want to send off and fucking rule these and do these rules on, right? The pin up boy for that.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are young. So it's like, you don't really care. It's like, all right, get him off and fucking give him 6 weeks.
Yeah, okay.
You know, I'm just saying, if that was like the pin-up boy Walsh, would they, you know, like, it's different because you want him playing every week.
Yeah, but you should still.
I fucking know, but I know how the game is. Yeah. It's not like that, but they fucking rule like that.
Yeah. It does become like that sometimes. As for the Titans, mate, they got blown off the park again now in the second half. Do the Titans have the cattle to get out of this right now? Think about some halves that have been – halves is clearly the spot that they need. They need some direction. They've got outsider They've got an older Foz in there and Tanner Boyd. Respectfully, and I feel like I'm drumming down on him now, and I don't mean to be, but it's just the nature of what we do. We have to call it how we see it. He is not a week in, week out halfback in this competition. He just ain't. There's a couple of halves that are playing. I watched Lockie Ilias I was watching the New South Wales Cup. So Toby Sexton, an ex-Titan, and Lockie Ilias were playing in that game. And there's obviously Jackson Hastings over at the Newcastle Knights. There are Jonah Pezzett, who's now going to – looks like Munster and Jerome Hughes are both back this week. He's not going to be playing first grade.
There's a plethora of decent halves out there that can
Gold Coast have to go try to get themselves a half.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're going to struggle this year because they lost Tino, you know. He's their captain, soul, spirit, everything like that. Like, they go off how good he goes. And, they haven't got him, so – these other blokes have to. It's going to be tough for you for the Titans.
Fafita and Campbell both come back. They look a little bit rusty.
They look way better.
The team was better. They were okay. They'll be better for the run.
Yep. Yeah. Campbell's dangerous, man. He's never going to go. You look at the preseason that he has. You go, fuck, he's put on weight. Mm. He's just going to be stronger inside.
He does look a little bit stronger.
You're talking like 2 kilos. He looks stronger, right? He's been in the lab. He's been working his ass off. He looks strong. His old man wasn't that big.
Yeah.
He's strong as fuck, but
I think he's going to be bigger than his old man.
He's taller. He's taller, but he's just like, he's got a little bit. He doesn't have to have that much muscle.
Not too much more.
No.
Just a little bit more.
And Fafita, he's going to take about 3 or 4 games to get back to his best. But he was willing, Fafita. He was. He was very willing.
He knows
the pressure that's going to come after him. You've still got a decent side there, man.
Yeah.
Furmo's a good player.
Phil Sammy.
Fotowaker, Sammy, Pellicea. Good enough to be better than
they're sort of at the halfback. They need a halfback.
Need a halfback, yeah.
Sunday, 4 p.m., Warriors beat the Knights 20-12. Mace, I thought this was a very physical game.
Yeah.
Felt like the ball was in play just in between the 20s for a long period.
I think
this
was the best game of the round.
Yes.
Yeah, and we'll get to the Parramatta one.
That
was pretty high quality because I think this was probably with the percentage of the completions and how hard they were running, the back fives. Fuck, it's good to watch the Warriors.
It was a good battle, yeah.
Like just the difference was, right, when they kick it to Newcastle and you see their back five trying to come out of yardage and then you kick it to the Warriors and you got fucking take your pick. Dallin is coming off the back fence, right? And then you got RTS and then you got Montoya. They're big bodies, man, and they do not give a fuck. They test your will. The whole line's coming down there. Dallin takes it on the 30. When I saw that, I went, there's a big difference because I just watched the other guy come out of the yardage and he made 3 meters and then this guy gets it on the 20 and he goes, my goal is to get to that 30.
Yeah.
Fucking who wins?
I reckon there was an advantage of maybe 10 meters for the first 3 carries of both teams pretty much every set. And Tuala and Bradman Best were rolling up their sleeves too. Yeah. They were getting into it. They were working so hard just to get those first 3 carries before their middles got into it because it was just in play. And Warriors just always had an extra 10 metres field possession, it felt like.
And it did, and it was because they were catching it. As I said, like why the Warriors and all the teams who win the field completion, you know what I mean? Like they win the completion battle and the field position because – they're catching it on their like 30, getting to the 40 on nearly their first hit up, right? So by the time they finish that set, they're on their 40, nearly at 30 with the attacking kick.
Yep.
And then like the Knights were just constantly coming out and then they'd have to rely on just say a massive run, which is hard against the Warriors. You know, the drums start beating, everyone wants to put a shot on you. You're stuck in your corner there. And they did that for majority of the game. For even the Knights to be in this game, was a massive effort.
Yes, I agree.
Because their kicking game.
Best game of so far for the Knights. Better than their win against the Storm.
Their kicking game isn't as good.
No, the halves are a problem.
The halves are really, they're a big problem. You know, like Gamble puts a little pop gun up and like Cogger, he's not a massive kicker. That's where they're going to miss Hastings, man. That's why I keep thinking it's Cogger, it's Hastings and Cogger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Okay. That's the combination because have a look how, like when Penrith come on, I don't think Cogger's a 7. Doesn't organise enough. I reckon he's a runner.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, that's why a lot of people would say the opposite. That's why he was brought there to be that guy. But I'm the same as you, mate. People have got excited about Cogger because of the way he played in the grand final. I was always like, hold up. Yeah, it's the same as we've been critical of O'Sullivan before, going after the Dolphins. Like, he was really good for Penrith. But outside of that, I haven't seen a shitload of reps to say that he can be that guy long term. Now, I don't necessarily I'm not sure. We've said this from day one. One of your favorite sayings is iron sharpens iron. I've said anyway, and you've agreed with it, that it doesn't necessarily work in the halves because you want to have the guy. Man. You don't want iron sharpens iron.
No.
You want it middles. You want it outside backs. Guys that compliment. Do all this shit work. Compliment.
Yes, compliment someone other. Needs to compliment yeah. Hastings. Someone needs to compliment Cogger and Gamble. They just don't work.
Nah.
Right at the moment, I'm like, Gamble gets the worst ball in the worst situation. I don't know what you expect from the guy. Mm. Yeah, he gets a little kick. He's on the short side. They pass him, so he puts a little cage kick up. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, where's he? He's not getting the lion's share of the ball. He's not running the ball. He gets a couple of little plays here and there, but he's like, fuck, I'm not getting the ball that I want.
Because KP loves it left.
Yes.
Bradman Best is over there. Greg Marzoon would only when he's fit, but Anari Tuala was playing a good game, so they wanted to play more to their left. By the time it comes over to the right, it's all like
it's you know,
Dane Gagai and Frizz. They're just more toilers. And yeah. It's
just like it's Frizz, the talk would be like Frizz, I want early ball or go to the line and someone out the back with Frizz. Because he's their best player, Frizz. And you've got to give him the ball when he wants.
Frizz was outstanding.
He was outstanding again. His efforts, oh, mate, he's one of the best forwards in the game. Especially, I think he's like 32. Mm. Still killing it. But they need to figure this shit out. I think, personally, get Hastings in there, running the thing like he does, and just have Cogger on that left.
Mm. Well, remember when he got dropped though, you were critical that he wasn't taking the ball to the line enough.
He needs to fucking just take it on.
Yeah, that's the last
just, this is the fucking last conversation you're going to have with O'Brien. Mate, if you're not taking the ball on, you're probably going to be in reserve grade again if you're not taking the line on. We need you to fucking get in there, dig like these other the good halves do. Cop a lick.
There's a part of me that thinks they're
– He's still the best option for him, Hastings, at seven.
Okay.
Just not – I'm not sure who – you pick who your 5'8". I don't know who it is. Gamble will be good off 14. I reckon his energy off the bench. You can't have him out of the sight. Energy off the bench. And if he comes on like a fucking Kurt Mann, just run. Get the ruck pushing through.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Still got some big boys like the Saifidi boys and Thompson and all these guys and Elliot.
Yeah. I think Leo Thompson will be back this week. He missed the game with suspension. But their middles aren't doing a good enough job as well.
Nah.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, it is a tough one.
The Raiders blow a 18-0 lead against the Sharks at Cronulla. And the Cronulla Sharks end up winning 36-22. Raiders, so they're leading 18-0. They end up getting dusted 36-6, similar to the Dragons the week before, right? So does this highlight how close the competition is or how important momentum is, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah,
a
combination of everything. If you want to keep dropping balls and like just say the back end of that half, the first half, right? They were in complete control of that game.
Mm.
Then you start dropping balls in your own 40.
Like to be fair, they were dropping it early as well. Both teams.
It was a pretty rough game, wasn't it, at the start?
It was another stinker to begin with, and then it got into a rhythm.
It's a combination of everything, man.
Yeah.
And the middles, if you don't have fit – and they do have fit, resilient middles, Canberra, but like, fuck, they can only cop so much. And I just thought they would have dominated Cronulla. Cronulla's going to take so much fucking – out of this game, they have four middles missing.
Mm.
Three middles, like three starters. That's the only reason why I backed Canberra. I was thinking, you know, it's going to be a tough game, but you're thinking they're going to run over them. It happened the opposite way.
Sticky mentioned it in the post. He said it was disappointing because we're playing Newtown, basically.
Yeah.
He was playing Newtown with all the Reggies. Like bigger Tuku Hull, Tapahu.
The big dude from Cronulla.
Only 19 minutes, but he had 9 carries for 80 metres.
That was damaging. I bet Fitzy said at halftime, you just go lights out in the second half, set the standard, and it'll bring you off.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he did.
Big boy, man.
He's huge. He's got
you
a lot of
– you need to get more minutes in those big boys, eh?
Yeah.
Just leave him out
there.
That's
all you got to do. I was watching reserve grade. I watched Para versus Tigers yesterday. I was like, these middles have – I'm just particularly talking about the middles, right? They have everything, right? Body shape, everything like what first grade players – that's first grade coaches are looking for. It's the minutes that you dish out.
Yeah.
And it's the quality. It's the quality of minutes. If you're not dominating the ruck in the middle in a reserve grade game and all the details that you've been taught at training, they're not going to put you up just because you do a mad offload here and there and you might run 150 metres. No one gives a shit about that.
Mm.
It's defence, because look what happens. Fucking ball, the momentum switches over, and then if you can't fucking do 18 tackles in a row – without being able to get back on your bike and get fucking one hit up and then kick chase.
Effectively.
It is a marathon out there. You know, so I think, you know, most young kids who are out there, make sure if you want to be an NRL player, work on your fitness. Mm. It is 80% fitness.
Yep.
20% IQ and fucking being able to play the game. But it is relentless out there.
My biggest question mark on Sharks going into the year was Trindle at 6 long term, whether he's the answer. Good. I've seen enough.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be thereabouts this year. I don't like my bet at the moment for them not to make the top eight. They're looking pretty good. But I think with Adam Fanua Blake arriving next year with some of the middles that they already got, they could be a genuine contender next year.
Genuine. The Mulatalo, man, he's unreal. Katoa. Jesse Raymond's one of the best Talakai defenders. Talakai was great. The young Ido kid, he did a job. I thought he was outstanding.
Yeah, he was good. Kid. Really good.
Geez, he looks good. He looks like a Val Holmes, Timoko sort of hybrid.
Mm.
He's got all that. He's been around for a minute.
He does look a little bit better. Yeah, I think he's about 24, 25.
It's Cook Islands too. Yeah.
Kevin Iroh's son.
Yeah. Great Kevin Iroh. Yeah, I think they've got what it takes. I think they can really, like what they're building right now, they would have been filthy on last year, how they fell off a little bit. But what they're building now in these games where people thought, fuck, yeah, Canberra's going to win. Canberra's not a bad side. Mm. You got three middles out. You got three starters out. And they still dish that up and get a team like Canberra who are they're made for that sort of those games at Shark Park.
Yeah, but they didn't play like that. The middles were pass happy early. They were all trying to like even Pups and Tups were doing these weird tip-ons. Smithies weren't fucking Horsebro looked different awful coming
page,
off the bench.
Different pages, man.
They try to play pretty. Mm. And I'm expecting a bounce back. I don't know who the Raiders are playing next week. I'll grab it in a little bit. But I'm expecting a bounce back and a physical encounter this week with whoever they got. Actually, I'll have a look just to make sure now. What's that round? That's the Bulldogs. Let's go to the Raiders. They are playing Parramatta.
Ooh.
Yeah. They love playing. They're the sort of team. Mm. This is the perfect bounce back game for their middles. Yeah. I think they'll bounce back. Speaking of the Eels, mate, they go down in a nail biter to the Tigers. A really entertaining game. Tigers really had to dig deep in this one. Gatho had a chance to steal it after the siren, but the Tigers deserved it, mate. Has Benji already proven that you can play golf whilst also coaching first grade?
I think he listened to Dean Ritchie and just, you know, he rang Dean and goes, how can I coach better? And Dean Ritchie would have given him all the tips. So thanks, Dean Ritchie, for letting him know how to coach. He just looks like he's having fun.
Mm, he does.
Little bit. Like I could see when Faffy and that was getting up when they were winning, you could see I think it's a coaching thing. You got to hold your shit together.
Have to.
Get up and fucking cheer, Benji. You know you got it in you.
No, it's
especially
like
that. I know that. But you see some coaches like Sticky and that get up and show their emotions, belly and all that. I love all those sort of shit, man. Yeah. Anyway, I just think they look like they're playing with a real fucking
– You know what it is? Just quickly before I cut you off.
Yeah.
It's like when you feel like you're on the winner with 100 to go at the races and someone tries to early crow you and he's going, hold on. Like, let me see it. He's celebrating after.
Yeah,
he
got up after I know. I love it. But I just think they look like they're having fun. That Galvin kid looks like he's got a lot of energy in that kid. They respect what he's doing. The forwards. Stefano was the best prop in the first 20 minutes.
How good's he looking, mate?
He went after him. I told you. He'll go after Reg and he'll go after Paulo.
It was a good battle.
As I'm saying, when they're selecting the team, they're going to look at games like that.
Mm.
This young kid, he wants it. Like he only played 8-9 minutes of Origin last year. He's probably looking like he got slighted a little bit. All right, I want to prove myself to be an Origin player and I've got to go at these two dogs because they're the guys that have got my position.
Yep.
Right at the moment. I love seeing that shit.
Best.
Because he went at it, man, you know. It was pretty even battle the whole way. I thought Parra, when they got to that lead, I was like, oh, they could put the foot on throat sort of thing. And I'm like, they just missed a couple of things. That game was draining.
They'll miss a Mitchie to ice it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of bad kicks here and there, like a couple of wrong decisions, but like they just kept fighting the Tigers.
Yeah.
They kept fighting and fighting and fighting. The Galvin thing sort of galvanized them a bit, didn't it?
When he got in the name.
Yeah, so he galvanized it. Because when he went off, you can see when Appy goes, we fucking defended that 10 minutes for you.
Yeah.
He's 18.
He said, Appy said something after like the game, like guys like Samuel Afainu and Yanke. Oh, he said this is a couple of times now. So Appy said it, and also Folletti tipped me up in the offseason. He goes, bro, watch out for Samuel Afainu. He's a guy who's really been vocal at training.
From Manly?
Yeah, come from Manly. Back only about four or five games at Manly. Apparently, like, he's super vocal.
Yeah.
And apparently he was, like Appy said, behind the line when they were defending their line, he was pumping up the boys and letting them know it was good effort. Shit like that's infectious.
Shows a lot of steel, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's a confidence from a young kid because that's what you want to see from a young kid when you're Papaliti, when you're Clem, when you're those guys who have been around for a minute.
Bateman.
I want to see the young kid, like, that means something to him defending the line.
Mm.
And when something happens, when you get scored against, you fucking filthy. And he's going, I'm like, oh, I love that sort of shit.
Mm.
You know what I mean? When Galvin got 10 minutes, right? That I sort of laugh because it's totally different of when we're talking about Platt's hip drop. It's still a hip drop, but I get it. But like what's his name, Tuolungi?
Yeah, Kelma.
You would have looked there and just went, get off. Yeah. He sort of stood on your thing and said, hey, Galvin, get off and slap him on the head.
He sort of relaxes after he passes the ball because he thinks it's over, and then Galvin's like,
he just didn't know what he was doing. He's like, because, you know, I get it. It stalled it. Whatever they're saying, the hip drop is, he did do it, and that's why he's wearing 2 weeks.
He's going to wear the 2 weeks.
Which sucks, but I'm like, yeah, that was totally different hip drops in my eyes. But they defended that 10 minutes, and I think that could, like, steer him in the way that they want to be steered for this whole season. Just those little moments like that, they could go on a little bit of a run now.
The stats back it up with what you're saying. They pretty much lost every big stat across the board, whether it was possession, completion rate, yardage, everything. But this new Tigers team, and it's credit to Benji, and I feel like there's some hope. There's some hope with Benji. There's some hope with Galvin and Buller. You know what it's like, mates, when you're playing. Middles will do exactly – if they feel like there's light at the end of the tunnel, if they work their ass off.
Do anything for your You for will your do, halves.
Yeah. But if you don't have hope or you don't feel like we've got the answers in the team, specifically in the halves, then you can quite easily cave. Teams can quite easily cave. And I feel like the Tigers have some hope.
It's like the O-line if they just give up sacks to the quarterback, right? It's a middles. Middles are like that to our halves.
Mm.
We should protect, like, just say for half, we'll do some good shit for it. You'd protect that half, right? Mm. Guys like Joey and JT and all these guys, you'd do anything, Lockie and that, anything for these halves when you play with them.
Yep.
Shifty, you had the same sort of affinity for him. Braith, you protect your halves because they do good shit.
Mm.
They win you games.
You know they're going to go after it.
Yeah, they go after it. You know, the line, game's on the line. Look what happens. That young kid who got 10 minutes in the bin, we defend our asses off for this little fucker, comes back on, ice the game for us.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Class.
And fucking feel sorry for Gutho because he would have ran about 20K and then he has to kick a winning goal. Feel sorry for you, Gutho, but fucking unlucky.
Yeah, yeah. Paramister, obviously that. Change of rotation, I didn't like it. It's been working so well for them. They changed it. They started Hopgood and Offhand Gower on the bench.
Madison
and Junior Bolo started the game the way that they've been playing off the bench, and you can't do that. It's a different mindset. I know those two guys have experience, but
I don't mind the Paulo start. I just don't like the Madison start.
Yeah, okay, because Hopgood keeps it a little bit more direct. More direct. Yeah.
And Madison comes off with the offloads, and he comes on, he just, like, he'll change the ruck speed, and he'll change with the offloads. He's really good defensively.
Yeah.
But not to start games.
Yeah.
Hopgood's about that. He'll bang you.
Yeah. He's made a point to – Hopgood goes after it defensively, and then he starts playing a little bit of footy at the back end of the halves. Yeah, not too sure why Brad changed it. I think maybe because of the way that the Sharks middles played against the Tigers last week, and they wanted to start. I guess he might have challenged his middles, and the Tigers, credit to the Tigers, because Clem and Stefano get the
they held tick. Up, but, like, you have a look at Paul. I mean, they get the W, they get the 2 points, but, like, I'm not sure if they won that battle in the middle. Because there was pretty even at the start.
It was even.
Then
it
they
was
end even. Up the Parramatta, like, they took like the last sort of 10 minutes, man. Then that's when they come in.
Yep. I like Vanua Polo.
Yeah, he loves it. He loves
him
the tough
Stefano,
shit.
Him and Stefano, they could be it, man. Could be that last little missing piece. Look, and now they just got to sprinkle on a few vets in and around the team. Yeah,
it looks like they've got a decent team.
They've got something
every week.
They need some outside backs. Jazzy Ollam's been good as well. But
what about is it Tupou kid?
Tupou. He's off to Dolphins.
What about him getting through the line with a double cramp? You seen double cramp, but it was two. It wasn't one. So he got through. He couldn't even move. It was a clean line break. I would have loved to have seen the first couple of minutes. Clean line break, just bang, bang.
There was about five or six of them that were dropping like flies at the back end of that game. It was a hot day yesterday out there at Combank. I was out at Parramatta yesterday. It was hot, and there was a few dropping. Some good footy all around. Maybe a couple of sinkers mixed in there, but again, some really good footy. So that's it, mate. We'll get to previewing the game on Thursday. Any quick turnaround? So I'll see you Thursday.
All right.